This conference will now be recorded.
Yes, we are, Mayor.
I'm going to call the November 3rd, 2020 meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance being led tonight by Councilmember Steckler.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Naomi, please call the roll.
Yes. Mayor Hoetzkos.
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Donnell.
Here.
Councilmember Bond.
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari. Councilmember Steckler.
Here.
Councilmember Briles.
Here.
And Councilmember Morgan.
Here.
Motion to exclude Councilmember Cavallari.
Motion to excuse or exclude?
Excuse. My bad.
Seconded.
Anyone? Yes, the motion to excuse tonight.
Yes.
Was there a second?
I think I heard that.
I did, seconded.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously, 6-0. Audience communication, opportunity to speak to the council. You have 3 minutes. If you'd like to speak to the council, raise your hand or shout if you're not, don't have a video on, let me know. Anyone want to speak to the council tonight? Going once, twice, 3 times. Be another opportunity at the end of the meeting. First order of business tonight is the, I can never pronounce this, is it Left Ward? Is that the proper pronunciation, the vacancy on the Left Ward? Michael, do you want to introduce it?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. We currently have a vacancy on the Left Board as a result of resignation of then Councilman Mike Dodd to become Director of Public Works and Planning. The state law, RC Chapter 4126, requires that each city having a population of at least 20,000 establish their own disability board. It requires that the board must consist of 5 members, 2 of which must be city council members. So what we're asking for is council to choose and appoint to fill that vacancy on the Left Board.
Any motions? Anyone want to express interest? I can't remember. Did Councilmember Bond, did you express interest in this previously?
I'm one of the current members. It was Mike Todd and myself. And so we'll need to select somebody to serve with me. It's about 3 meetings a year. They're usually about 30 minutes. This is a pretty good board to jump into. It's better than why we're 8. I'd make a motion to appoint Adam to serve on the Left Board.
Great.
Adam Morgan.
I'd be happy to.
I saw him raise his hand expressing interest.
I did, yes.
And we have a motion.
Mayor, you need a second.
Yes.
I saw John raise his hand. Too, so I didn't know if we needed to talk about it.
Oh, I didn't see that. Sorry.
I would also love to volunteer in addition, if possible. But I'm just open to help out. Sounds like an interesting position.
Absolutely. Same here. I'd like to help in any way I can, and if this is an area that needs a fill-in, I would be more than happy to give my 2 cents on the matter.
Well, we had a motion. I never heard, did we have a second to the initial motion? So there is no second. Does someone want to make another motion?
I'll make a motion to appoint John Steckler.
Second.
I didn't see John Wake, so I thought it was going to be like Wyra, where you're going to short straw, you're the new guy, you're stuck with it. So.
It's hard to see everybody sometimes on the screen, so.
Looks like you're back to Wyra 8, Adam, sorry. I tried to help you out.
It's quite all right.
There'll be lots of opportunities as the year goes on.
Yeah, no, I'm just
that's embarking dog. So we had a motion. Did we have a second?
I seconded.
We did.
Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Was that a 6-0 vote then? So that would be motion 2020-865. So that brings us to the two items of old business. I'll turn it over to Michael for both of those.
Thank you, Mayor. Members of council, as you may recall, way back in March 24, 2020, City Council meeting a proclamation of emergency that I had declared was approved and effective retroactively to March 20, 2020. Since that time, the council has renewed the motion to extend numerous times. Most recently, it's set to expire at tonight's meeting. I would ask for the council to entertain a motion to extend the emergency proclamation again to our very first council meeting in December, which would be December 1st.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Stackler, seconded by Councilmember Bond. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries 6-0. This brings us to the meat of the evening, our study session on the proposed budget and discussion on whether to raise any property taxes. So I'm going to turn it over to Michael and Jeff.
Mayor, with your permission, under old business, we also had a real quick discussion relating to Veterans Day. So I'll begin with that summary. The city's annual Veterans Day celebrations on Wednesday, November 11, will include a pre-recorded commemorative ceremony. It will be streamed on social media along with a reverse parade to thank and honor military personnel who have served our country. The commemorative ceremony will air on the city's Facebook page at 9 a.m. on November 11, 2020. The pre-recorded ceremony originates at the Mill Creek Veterans Monument and at 15429 Bethel Everett Highway. Due to the social distancing mandate from Governor Inslee, however, no in-person participation will be allowed this year. So we have pre-recorded this ceremony. Following the online ceremony, a reverse parade will take place on Main Street between 155th Street Southeast and 153rd Street Southeast. Just for landmarks, it's between then the Cold Stone Creamery and the former University Bookstore. The display of military memorabilia will be available for public viewing from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Veterans Day and will feature a variety of military items. These items will include uniforms from many of our staff who are veterans who have served our country in the United States military. And so we are working to personalize our display this year. Military uniforms, boots, rifle, helmet, and a wreath will also be on site to pay tribute and to the service of all of our U.S. military veterans. Also, something special for this year is that Kristen Rasmussen and Barb Heidel have worked together, and Barb has reached out to local elementary schools to have through various teachers to draw pictures and thank you cards, which Barb then inserted in the plastic sleeves. And we are going to have a display board also under the tent there on Main Street that displays the school children's tributes on Veterans Day. This also includes, I believe, over 20 thank you cards, which Barb is then working with our local nursing homes to distribute those thank you cards directly to veterans who are residents there. This is a great collaboration. I want to thank Kristen Rasmussen and Barb for her volunteerism. We cannot do this without the work of all in the community. And I'm especially excited that this year we will feature many of the uniforms of our staff who again served in the military. So that concludes the summary on Veterans Day, Mayor.
Anyone have any questions for Michael?
Okay. I actually don't have a question for Michael, but I'd like to see if I could get to Barb some thank you notes and pictures maybe from Cora to add. So I'll have her do that and get up with you. So I'm sure she'd appreciate it. And maybe even Benjamin's kids and Adam's kids might even want to participate too. So I'll reach out to them.
Okay. So Mayor, with your permission, Mayor, then I will begin with some quick introductory remarks for the budget.
Please do.
Thank you. We are pleased to submit to Mayor Holtzclaw, Mayor Pro Tem Bignell, and members of council the city's budget for the 2021-2022 biennium. While we're aware that under Washington law, we're expected to forecast 2 years out exactly what we believe is going to be happening, both in terms of our revenue and expenditure lines. While I think the expenditure lines are something that we can speak to with a little more confidence, none of us knows what's going to be happening within the next 2 years, let alone the next quarter, as it relates to the economic condition, both globally as well as domestically. So what we expect this year is not only with a biennium that's forecasting for 2 years, but also a frequent checking in with each other in these historic, unprecedented times so that the assumptions that are contained in this budget can be explored and determined whether or not they are consistent with the revenue and the data that's coming in, or amendments need to be made. We are anticipating multiple amendments only because we're anticipating a lot of new feedback that may determine a different course than the one we have proposed. What we want to do, and it's a philosophy of both myself and our finance director, Jeff Ballantyne, is ensure that we're observing trends early and that we're making corrections for trends early, rather than waiting the traditional time at the 1 year mark. So with that brief comment, I want to talk about some highlights from it, from the budget. First, the city maintains a balanced budget while maintaining the current service levels without using any of its reserves. This budget does not include any property tax increases for 2022. The budget consists of the funding required to complete the capital projects identified within the capital facilities program, to include those projects delayed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Our team is reviewing the current capital improvement plan and plans to provide council with recommendations consistent with council's direction, and a budget amendment may be necessary at that time. With regard to the organization of the budget, staff organized the budget document focusing on financial data at a meaningful level of summary and detail while explaining city operations and policies. This budget begins with an overview of all funds compared to the previous bienniums of 2017-2018 and 2019-2020. The budget then provides more detailed information regarding the revenues and expenditures of each fund and department. Washington State prescribes certain presentation requirements for the budget, and the revenue section of the biennial budget must present comparative information for each fund, including the actual receipts for the last completed fiscal biennium, the estimated receipts for the current fiscal biennium, and the estimated receipts for the ensuing fiscal biennium. Finally, with regard to our current financial condition, the economic impacts of COVID-19 are significant. The city projects a loss of $4.2 million of revenue due to the effects of the pandemic. Our city's families and businesses are affected, as is the City of Mill Creek's fiscal capacity. As the pandemic and the potential future waves unfold, our reserves must cover losses from sales and use tax, passport operations, central services, and real estate excise tax. Approximately 40% of the city's revenue comes from sales and use tax, permits, passport services, recreation, and central services. The 2021-22 budget assumes a $290,257 decrease, which is roughly a negative 2.4% in those funds. Also, despite the short-term, one-time-only revenues that the city has received and expects to in the next biennium from the farm construction project, it's clear that retail sales have plummeted and unemployment is skyrocketing. We have been hit hard by the economic impact of COVID-19 pandemic. In anticipation of these continuing impacts in the coming months, in the past months, the city immediately froze open positions and has continued to look for ways to improve efficiencies and reorganize its workforce. We do not expect that our vigilance can at any point subside, especially when we take into account that the second wave of this pandemic has not been factored into our budget forecasts going forward. So with that introduction, I would like to turn the floor over to Director Ballantyne. And I want to thank our entire team working together, supporting Jeff and his work. And Jeff, really appreciate the extraordinary amount of time you've put into this budget in the last month and a half. Thank you so much. Jeff?
Thank you, City Manager. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. And thank you, Council. And a special thanks to the public. In today's presentation, it's going to cover a lot of what we've covered before. As I move through it, if I move too rapidly, I just ask that you ask me to pause and feel free to ask questions throughout the presentation. I would like to tell the public that we do have a very detailed by-line item preliminary 2021-2022 budget out on our website. You'll find that under the finance page, so feel free to take a look at that. And then feel free as well to send messages over. I'll be more than happy to I'll let you know what our assumptions are and how we're progressing through. So this is a series of meetings. Our next meeting will be a public hearing. So we'll be able to hear from the public on comments. The current plan is the first council session in December. We'll hopefully be prepared to present a final budget for consideration from the council. So today, the big question is really about revenue sources for the next biennial. And the first thing we want to talk about is property tax. So a lot of you probably already know all the ins and outs of levy property taxes and how they're calculated. But for those that do not know, what I'd like to do is begin this presentation to talk about what the current makeup is of the 2020 property tax for a typical homeowner in the city of Mill Creek. And then I want to review how property tax is calculated at a pretty high level. There's some very understandable misconceptions about how the dollars are apportioned. I want to review the annual levy certification with the county, give an example of how property taxes are calculated and apportioned with a possible 2021 levy rate. And then I want to talk briefly about the implicit price deflator and what that may mean to the city if the city council decided that they did want to move forward with a possible levy. So with that, let me begin the conversation about property tax and where the 2020 tax dollar breakdown is. And this is a pretty high level for a typical resident in the city limits. 44% of their dollar, 44 cents on that dollar, goes to the school district, Everett School District, 26% to Washington State, 17 cents to the city, Snohomish County gets 6 cents, Snow Isle 4, and then 2 cents going to Central Puget Sound Regional Transit Authority and 2 cents to the surface water utility that the city manages as well. When we talk about property tax, we're really talking about what the overall levy is based on the total absolute dollar within city limits. The levy dollar itself is not based and does not fluctuate as the assessed value does. So said another way, if we had an 8% increase year on year in our assessed value, that does not mean that our absolute dollar for the levy goes up by 8%. In fact, there's a constitutional limit of 1%, which may be further limited by implicit price deflator, which I'll talk about in a second. So the maximum amount that we as a city can levy is based on the absolute dollar that we've, our highest tax levy amount that we've had in the past, and a 1% on top of that. That's the max. What happens though, is that the property, that levy amount is then basically a levy rate is created using the total city's assessed value. So you take the absolute dollars divided by the new total assessed value for example, this 2021, and that gets you a levy rate. And then we typically refer to tax rates as essentially dollars per thousand of assessed value to kind of keep it simple. And I'll kind of go over what that means here in a second when I show an example of it. But again, no more than 1% can be levied by the city, depending on the implicit price deflator, which I'll call IPD, unless the public votes that they want to levy lid lift. So there's three major components to property taxes. The levy amount that we just talked about, which is that absolute dollar that, again, is maintained by constitutional limit. The assessed value, which can go up or down year on year. And then the levy rate, which is, again, levy amount divided by assessed value. What we have to do as a city is make a determination of whether or not we are going to levy and how much we're going to levy, or whether or not we even want to bank. You can bank whatever we don't levy for future years. But we have to turn in whatever that decision is to the county assessor no later than November 30th. Then once the county assessor receives that, the assessor will take a look at that what the levy rate would be necessary to raise that amount of revenue. And I'm going to go into the examples here. So if we look at this example, and I apologize for how simplistic it looks, but I'm kind of trying to get at a couple things here. Let's just assume that there's a city, and in that city, they have a combined assessed value of $100,000 in that first year. And let's say that the levy rate in this assumption is $2 per thousand. So if you take $200 divided by 100,000, essentially what you're saying is if you had two homes in this city, in this assumption, and they're both equally valued at $50,000, they're both going to share equal amount of property tax in absolute dollars, or $100 apiece. But let's say the second year comes and the very first home actually increased quite a bit in value. It increased by $100,000, so its new assessed value is $150,000. But the other house maintained its assessed value at $50,000. Now let's look at the absolute dollars. Again, the absolute dollars did not double as the total assessed value doubled. It only increased by $2, or that 1% constitutional limit. So we took the $200 multiplied by 1% is $2, and that gets you to an absolute levy amount of $202. But if you combine that AV of $200,000, then you have a new levy rate. So remember, your previous year's levy rate was $2. In this case, because there's more assessed value, the levy rate drops to $1.01 per thousand. So that means that the assessor would create that rate to cover the $202 necessary. So then what happens with that levy rate of 1.01, as you apply that to the $150,000 home, you get a total property tax that home will cover at $151.50. Whereas house number two that did not increase in assessed value actually dropped to $50.50. So as we look at our actual numbers, and I apologize for the number chart here, but I think it's important. So what you're seeing up on top of this slide is the 2020 assessed value for the city of Mill Creek at the 4.4. And then what we had certified our regular levy to the assessor last year, we certified at $6,450,000. That gives us a tax rate per 1,000 of about 1.45. So if you take a home in our city limits of $500,000, That equates to about $724.04 in tax. Now, we've had a lot of new construction and added improvement. Well, that actually helps homeowners because it's actually increasing, and we're now apportioning the levy across new construction. So in 2020, we added just over 5.2 million in new construction or added improvement. And we also had a reevaluation of current property, which went up by 4.65%. So right now, the county preliminary assessed value of the city of Mill Creek is at just about 4.7 versus the 4.5 that you saw, and that's a total increase of 4.76. Now, if you take that and move it forward into 2021, and that's the assessed values here, that 4.7, and if we had, and this is example only, a 1% levy increase, that would equate to about $64,500 based on what we certified last year. So if you use what we had the certified last year plus the $64,000, the new levy rate example only would be $6,514,500. So your levy rate per thousand actually decreases in this case to just about 1.4. So if you remember, the last tax for home value from 2020 estimated was $724.04, it would actually decrease in the same value home at $698.03. Keep in mind, however, your home or the public's home, if your value went up or down proportionate, you know, higher or lower than what the average is, then you may see a change one way or another based on that. I walked through the EMS levy example the same way. In this case, when we're looking at it for 2020, we had the tax for a $500,000 home would have been roughly $196.43. Using the same process that I just described, it would actually go down to 189.37. And again, that would assume a 1% levy increase, which is an example only and not what we're suggesting. Now, I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a graphic. The implicit price declared.
Can we ask a question?
Yes.
Could you go back one slide? I'm just curious about something, because I've heard this and studied this and some stuff that Mike Todd made me read. But I'm curious, our home values in these examples always stay stagnant, but they don't. They actually go up. So in the example that you're showing here, I don't know, Mill Creek, for example, but, you know, Snohomish County, 17% increase, whatever it might be in home value, 7% increase. How does that affect the tax rate year over year from 20 to 2021 on the same home for 500,000? It's not going to stay the same home value, right? It's going to go up. So how does that affect the tax rate given the assessed value went up? Well, then the home's value is going to go up as well. How does that affect their tax rate? Do you have a calculation on that?
So the tax rate is again all tied to the tax rate per thousand. So that's not going to change. So again, it's the total levy dollar that the city has identified for EMS or property tax divided by the total assessed value for the entire city. Now, you are correct in that if your home appreciates in value, and if it appreciates greater than what the average is, then you may take on more of a tax burden and vice versa if that's the case. But it has no effect on the absolute dollars that the city will levy. It just is how it spread from one house to another. So said another way, we just talked about, let me back up a few slides here. The revaluation here that you see, 2020 revaluation up 4.65%. So if let's just assume that $500,000 house that you're right, I did not change that $500,000 by 4.65%, certainly could have, but theoretically, if that moved up 4.65%, then you would carry a 1% increase on the 700 and some odd dollars that I talked about before, and that would be it. Does that make sense?
I'm curious as to what would the tax burden be on a homeowner year over year with the similar increase in home values? Because I assume the assessed value on the city is based upon the increase in the value of homes or other things too, right?
So I can answer that real quick here. I'm doing the math right here. So if your home went up proportional with that 4.65% revaluation, that's citywide.
And that's based, the city's evaluation, assessed value increase is based on increase in value of homes, or what is it based on?
It's based on the market value increase of that home within the city limits.
All the homes within the city of Mill Creek. Okay.
Correct. So it takes a total levy amount that we're going to levy and distributes it, allocates it using that as its base. So to answer your question, if a home at 500,000 increased by 4.65%, as is identified here in the revaluation, then roughly your tax that you see there, 724.04, would increase to 731.28 with that 1%.
Okay. Okay. So
clear as mud.
Okay. So, but your home value should increase at the same rate as the assessed value for the city, correct?
If I'm a homeowner, I would hope it would. Otherwise, you don't want the reverse occurring for obvious reasons.
Is there any instance of that happening where home values could increase faster?
Yes. Yes. Your home, based on whatever you do for your home, let's say you do a renovation in your home, you can go up exponentially. Depending on what you did, your home value can go up, let's say, 20% versus somebody's home that maybe they went out and they took a look at and they saw that actually there was a lot of damage for whatever reason to it, and the value actually drops. So if your home value actually dropped, theoretically, on the tax rate, then your overall tax burden is going to drop, and vice versa. If you do a lot of improvements and you improve the market value of your home at a greater rate than what your the average home is going up in the city, then you're going to pay a little bit more of tax.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's a great question. Thank you very much. Any other questions on that before I get back into the – so the IPD, the implicit price deflator, if the council so choose to – move forward and they wanted to basically levy that 1% constitutional limit, there is one more obstacle, and that is the IPD. So any city that has 10,000 people or more, you can only increase your levy, like I said, by that constitutional limit of 1% or the implicit price deflator, whichever is less. And by the way, that implicit price deflator right now is at 0.602%. So remember when I talked about that roughly 65,000 would be the 1% potential? It's really 48,285. And just so you're kind of clear, that the IPD is generated by the Department of Revenue. This is not a city function where we're determining what that is. So it's based on gross national product, and you can actually go out to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, BEA, and they adjust those. You typically see it seasonally adjusted every July, but you can see that month by month if you'd like to take a look at that. But right now, for cities above 10,000, we are limited by that IPD. Yes, sir.
So if I'm reading this chart right, I see that in 2009, the IPD was actually -0.848. Being that that is less than 1%, did we have to lower our levy rate that year?
I do not know specifically what the city did. It's an excellent question. I'll have to get back to you, Councilmember Browse.
Mark, did you have a comment?
Maybe our new council members are more sophisticated than I was, but just a reminder, and also for the public, this is the city's portion of our property tax bill, which is much smaller than our, many of you might recall looking at your property tax bill going, well, it's like $4,000 or $5,000, because it has the library and other taxes that we voted in on ourselves. And we're right now focusing on a much smaller number that runs around $1,200 for the average homeowner in Mill Creek, which is the city's portion of that bill. Just a little FYI. You're probably already in the loop on that, but this stuff's super confusing, and I appreciate everything you're doing, Jeff, to try and make it a little more manageable and understandable.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. Jeff and Mike, one more question of clarification. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Councilmember Bond, I believe 2 years ago, we elected not to raise the general property tax, but we did vote to approve the 1% EMS levy. Is that how you recall it?
Yes. I don't recall us ever passing on EMS levies, but we have in prior years opted out of a property tax. Yes.
Right. So I just want to make that clear that we have two property tax decisions before us. But the question for Jeff and Michael was, you mentioned that the budget does not assume any property tax increase. Is that assuming there's no tax increase in either the regular property tax levy or the EMS?
That's correct, Mayor.
Thanks.
So what I'd like to do now is take a look at different property tax scenarios, depending on what the council will look. And again, in this case, I've coupled the two together. So what we'll do is we'll move through a series of scenarios, and we're going to look through 2026. So as you look at these slides, you'll look to the far right lower corner, and it's going to tell you the overall impact. And I'll say that out loud for those that do not have a video. But in the very first one, what you see here, I guess I should say this first. What we're trying to do here is try to hit some desired budget outcomes. And the city manager talked about this, is that we want to create a sustainable budget. And that really means that we try to exclude the one-time revenues, the one-time expenses, and really look at our ongoing expenses to run operations at the current service levels that the city is accustomed to, and then determine how we're going to fund that. And we try to fund that without increasing taxes. We look at other revenue sources to be able to do that, especially in these days with COVID-19 and so many folks being unemployed. So that was a top priority for us on how we can do it. And then part of it too is making sure that we have dollars available to develop the economy. And working with a number of different groups throughout the city in order to do that, so we have really long-term type of growth. So looking at the different property tax scenarios, this is a six-year financial forecast going back 2019 through 2026. And what you're looking at here is there's no property tax levy from 2021 all the way through 2026. The orange line indicates what our reserve goals are as directed by the council at 15% per ongoing revenues, not including any one-time revenue such as grants or that sort of thing. So you can see that line slightly increases as our revenue for our ongoing operations increases. What you see on the blue line is our fund balance. Now, this is our anticipated fund balance. And I want to make sure I say this pretty clearly going into the rest of this conversation. The way that we approach the revenue side is that we wanted to be realistically conservative. So said another way, this is not a sandbag approach at all. In fact, what you're going to see as an example is our sales and use tax in the out years. We're assuming that we're going to recover well from the COVID-19 and the drop in the economy, and we'll start to see a 4.5 and then a 4.6% average annual growth in some of the out years starting from 2022. But we anticipate that we're going to get hit further due to the COVID-19, and I'll talk about the impact of the farm. But you can see that what that decrease is going to be over time. And then when you look at all the way out in the out year, you see that's roughly a $600,000 difference between where we think the fund balance is going to end in 2026 versus our target of 15%. Now, why is that critical? For a couple of reasons, because I think the councils obviously did not know there's going to be a pandemic coming our way when we established the 15%. We do not know what we don't know, which is quite a bit on any sort of second wave, or if we have any sort of other disasters that may occur, capital funds, pipe breaks, problems with sinkholes, et cetera. So as we get closer to 2026, with this zero, with no increase in property tax, you can see that it gets dangerously close in 2026 to our goal line there. But again, with that being said, the landscape may radically change between now and 2026. So as the city manager indicated, we will be coming back continuously and always looking forward so we can keep the council best apprised of how we're kind of seeing the overall trends. This slide shows essentially that we pick up the IPD rate of 0.602% in 2021, but we have a 0% 2022 through 2026. And you see just by doing that, we would have a cumulative effect of $302,000 to the positive on our fund balance. And then we'll go year by year. So here we add 2022, 1%, the 0% 2023 through 2026. That is the impact of $725,000. Another step forward, 1% through 2023, but no more afterwards, is almost a $1.1 million positive impact. If you have the levy 1% assumed out to 2024, with zero in 2025 and 26, it's 1.3, then 1.5. And then finally, if you maximize your levy capacity, you hit 1.6 million in total impact. So fairly dramatic year by year, and that's something the council obviously should consider. Any questions on that before I go into financial benchmarks? Councilmember Briles?
I'm writing down the questions as I go. Looking at that same set of charts, do we have the same data for the 2007 to 2018 timeframe? Because that's the last times we saw a significant hit to property tax values. And I want to see how that recovery went for us, whether we stayed above 15% or what we did in that case. Having that data would be very helpful.
It's a great question. It's difficult for me to answer what the assumptions were back in those years as I wasn't here. So, and I just don't see that. However, I would love to share with you a presentation that I gave, I believe, in early April of this year, which talks specifically about what the impact was to the city of Mill Creek and the sales and use tax based on the 2008-2009 recession. And it shows by industry what the impacts were, and you can literally see what the recovery was by the businesses and how, in turn, that affected our revenue, if that's helpful to you.
Yeah, maybe Director Todd can chime in with his recollection, but if you go back to the slide, that's the desired budget outcomes, this 15%, I don't remember if it had been formalized prior to 2 years ago, because we had always talked since I've been on the council about wanting to have a reserve, but we never had any kind of reserve policy saying, what's it for? How much is the baseline for operating and so forth? And so with the budget 2 years ago, we set out these desired budget outcomes at the time to kind of guide our setting the budget and what we wanted to see with the general fund. So that was the point of the slide, is just to highlight for people and for the public too, to have a discussion about, if you looked at the next slide after this, I mean, we are in a better position than we were 2 years ago, in that our general fund is projected to be higher than what it was projected to be 6 years out when we adopted the last budget. But if we have a policy that says we want to have 15% of in a rainy day fund, or 15% of our general fund revenues, you'll see that there's only a delta of 600,000. So that's the money that we would have to consider for using for Dobson Remillard or some improvement to Mill Creek Boulevard or fixing a sinkhole or something like that. So that's the intent of that, is just to frame that discussion. We need to decide as a council what our comfort level is with the reserves and what we want to do with it, and whether we want the same outcomes that guided us 2 years ago to be what guide us for the next 2 years. Director Todd, is my recollection correct that we didn't have that 15% policy in place prior to 2 years ago?
Yeah, I don't think we had a specific number. We've kind of had a general policy, but I think Bob Stowe helped us get to this point. I think it made a lot of sense. So that's, I think it was new 2 years ago.
Mark?
Yeah, that's correct. I will say that I didn't completely agree with Bob Stowe's desire to do this. I think I think that there was a perception by him that our reserve fund was a little bloated, and setting this up created an opportunity to spend some money. Am I coming in okay? Test, okay. What the policy of the council prior to that was, to simplify it, one-time revenues should be done for one-time expenses, ongoing revenues used to cover ongoing expenses. So if we had a weird windfall of money, like an apartment complex would sell and we get a big tax windfall that we didn't expect, we would set that money aside and say, okay, maybe that would be something to use for the re-turfing the ball fields or some project out there, a performing arts facility, something, a one-time expense. And so and we built that fund up, and we also sort of intuitively knew that $5 million, which has been sort of the reserve fund magic number for a while now, it really wouldn't take much to wipe that out. It sounds like a lot of money, but it wouldn't take much of a tragedy to wipe that out. And in fact, having that nice size reserve fund relative to the size of our total annual budget was what helped us get through 2009, 2010, and 11 with not having to take some of the cuts that some of the other cities in the county had to do when that recession hit.
Benjamin?
Yeah, that's helpful, hearing that historical viewpoint on where that number was for the council. I guess I'm more looking for what the blue line looked like. The orange line we can just put in on top of it. We can say, well, what was the full fund? 15% of that, here's the minimum. But I want to know what the blue line looked like in order to help us understand, you know, the ups and downs, I guess.
No, Councilmember Bond.
I can comment on that. I can comment on that. This is the best blue line I've seen in my time on the council. historically, the blue line always is worse than this. The sky is always falling. The world is always ending. And somehow magically, year after year after year, we always end better than expected. So I used to freak out when I saw these blue lines, and again, they were usually worse than this. They were crossing more like 2023. They're already intersecting and going below. And what is historically, I thank staff, because historically what staff has done is they when they were speculating, they were low on the revenue side, cautious, and they were higher on the expense side. And so we never really hit the crisis that they always projected, but they always look like this. And in fact, this one is one of the best ones I've ever seen. So it's the most optimistic, if that helps you any.
They underpromised and over-delivered.
it does help.
Before I call on Adam, Michael or Director Todd, do you have did we pay for the sinkhole, the 800 or million we ended up paying? Was that out of the surface water fund rather than the general fund? I see Director Todd raising his nodding his head.
Yeah, essentially, remember we took out a bond and paid ourselves back because we borrowed some money out of the general fund. Finance Director Ballantyne would tell you the way we did that was a little bit goofy, but essentially that's what we did. By upping our stormwater fees, we're able to pay back that $900,000+ that huge sinkhole cost us. And we've set ourselves up for fixing some things in the future, like our F grade and C grade failures and some future pond work. So we are paying ourselves back. You will see that later on in the presentation, that there's a bond repayment is being paid out of stormwater fees.
Thank you. Councilmember Morgan.
Yeah, I had a quick question in regards to the projections. Do we have one that does not have a tax increase for this year, but then during the economic condition we're in, but then reflects future increases as the economy improves?
So if you're, I'm trying to track what you just said. So if what you're saying is, do we have a 0% upfront and then a 1% next year and then previous year? I did not do that. However, I would tell you, the cumulative effect is going to be much like what you're seeing here. So if, for as an example, I'm going to go to, I think this is here. If we assume that we did not take an increase this year, but through the out years, then essentially the impact would be very close to this 1.5 million.
Maybe we're going to get to it, but just as a point of reference, 1% for an average Mill Creek home, I'm sorry, 1% increase brings us as a city, what is it, 60,000, Jeff, 65?
That's right. You're right in the ballpark.
Yeah. So it's when you look at the size of our budget, it's nothing, right? It really is like not going to make much of an impact one way or the other. But what it is where we, if we skip it and go later and say, well, we're going to not take it now, but then we will take it later, we're actually better off doing the small hits now and planning on not taking it later, just because of the cumulative effect. It doesn't sound like much now, but when you get 5 or 6 years out, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is $1 million impact. So it's kind of a different way of looking at it. But another thing is when I first came on in the early 2004, 2005, 2006, we didn't take the increase. We skipped it. We had the bank capacity. But one of the things when the economy did tank and we were struggling a little bit, trying to make sure we were fiscally in a good place, you think, well, we could go and do our bank capacity. Well, do you want to really hit the taxpayer with a 3% or a 4% hit when you could have just done the 1% gradually and not have quite the big hit? You know what I'm saying? So they're not going to necessarily go, well, you saved me 4 years of taxes, but now I'm getting a 4% hit. It's just going to seem like a big hit. So I'm historically been reluctant to want to go with property taxes, but if we were looking at having to do it, smaller hits are easier to take, and the sooner gives us more return than waiting. Just some thoughts.
Thank you, Councilmember Bond. Well said. With your permission, then, Mayor, I move on to financial benchmarks. Thank you. So if you recall back in April, I gave the council and the public an update on where we're at on different types of metrics. And I want to keep the council apprised of that and then look forward to 2026, given the current preliminary budget numbers, again, that you can find on the website. But you can see in 2020 here, this is total cash balance sufficiency. So this is what we can draw on in times of need. So it's really the number of days that we can run if we didn't receive any revenue at all with current operations. So if you look at how we're projected to end this year, based on a lot of the essentially pumping the brakes earlier this year when COVID hit us, we were able to raise it from 159 days to 182 days. And that kind of gives us a little bit more cushion reserve in the out years. And again, depending on what we may see in another wave of COVID or something else, a sinkhole or something like that, this kind of helps compensate for it. So you can see the numbers look pretty good. They dropped down to 131, pretty consistent with that blue line that you saw in the previous slides. I do want to show you that SAO benchmark, this is the state auditor's office, is 60 days. That's typically what they're looking for in an audit. As we move into governmental funds, this is operating margin. So this really ties back to the conversation we just had about the sinkhole and how revenues are coming in. But this is for operating margin. And from this, we exclude grants. So kind of grant money is pulled out of this. This is just typical operations. So as we talked about before in 2018, as an example, we had an $835,000 sinkhole that dropped our total operating margin for that year down to almost, negative 4.5%. Then you see a huge increase in 2019, and that's because we were able to take on a $3.3 million general obligation bond. So that helped on our revenue side. And then you can see, again, consistent with what I just showed you on the fund balances, that blue line, you can see that we are still running a balanced budget all the way through 2026. So we're positive. The SAO wants you to be at 0% or better. The surface water operating fund, again, you can see in 2018, we had that $835,000 sinkhole. 2019, we're paying for some of that GNO bond. We're starting to pick up in 2020 the new rate increases, so we're realizing that as well. The reason why that spiked up to 41% is that we had some we were not able to get after some of the pipe repairs that we're planning for in 2020, and that is now slid to the right in 2021. So in our current budget, we're assuming that we're going to do that as well as what we were already scheduled to do. So we have a lot of work to do in 2021, but that's why that pulls it down. When you look at 2022, 2023, especially in the out years, we will come back to the council with a new capital facilities plan, the CIP plan, next week, and we will be talking about this. But what this is assuming is about $850,000 of pipe failure repairs in 2022 through 2024, and then $750,000 in 2025, 2026. That's just a placeholder. Again, we'll come back. But what's important here is with the rate increases that the city took, you are building reserves now to handle these one-time expenses such as the sinkhole or failures in our type C or type F pipes. This is change in governmental funds cash position. So this really shows, as you compare from one year versus another, if you look at all of our, just our cash investments and what we have in the bank account, where we're at. And again, this kind of ties back to Councilmember Bond's statement that you just don't really know yet. History shows us that there can be very significant events that could take away from your $5 million fund target that the city used to have. And as you can see in 2018, one sinkhole cost us $835,000. And then I do want to kind of point out, again, the CIF fund that we're going to be talking about next week, this may modulate a little bit from one year to another in out years, but you can see we moved all the 2020 CIF capital improvement projects that we couldn't get to in 2020 into 2021. Plus, in this assumption, we still have what we previously approved in the prior CIP. So that's why you see a significant decrease in 2021. I suspect that as Director Todd reviews the CIP next week, that we're going to slide a little bit this over 2022 as well, so it won't be as negative in 2021. This is the surface water. Again, this is the same thing, COVID-19, the repairs we're going to try to catch up in 2021. You can see in the, I don't even know what color that is. I guess it's more like a mustard, but in 2021, we have $1,031,000 assumed in that pipe repair, and then it goes to the $850,000 that and the $750,000 I talked about a little bit earlier. This is debt load. This is something to be, in my opinion, extremely proud of. So this is the amount of debt that we have to service as compared to our revenue line. The SAO likes to see 12% or less. We're running at 1.5%. So this includes the general obligation bond of the $3.3 million. So we are very, very healthy. If you look at it from a balance sheet point of view, we're not leveraged very high. Any questions on that before I get into the budget? Thank you. So this is really interesting to me, and I'm going to nerd out on you just a little bit. As we take a look at the next biennial budget, I wanted to take a look at what has happened. How do we compare versus other cities between 15,000 in population and 25,000 in population? So, and I'm just going to talk about this out loud. The cities of that average in Washington State on the revenue side pick up about $1,344 per capita, whereas their expenses are $998 per capita. Statewide average for all cities is for the revenues $1,027 per capita versus $782 in expense. So for 2019, the city of Mill Creek had $1,030 per capita, again, right in line with the statewide average of $1,027, $3 more. But our expense line was $717. Again, this is 2019 versus the statewide average of 782. So kind of keeping that in mind, in 2020, we anticipate that our revenue side is going to decrease from that 1,030 per capita to 1,020. And we expect our expense line to end the year up from 717 to 766. But what you're going to see in our budget is going to show what we anticipate, and I think realistically conservative, on 2021 revenue dropping another 20 to 1,000 in 2021 and $999 in 2022 per capita. For the expense side, again, if you recall, we're going to end this year at 766 per capita. We're assuming that we're going to be a decrease it to 711 per capita in 2021 and up slightly to 719 in 2022. So you can see we're really looking at ways that we can create efficiencies through reorganization, through technology, to try to maintain the same level of service support, anticipating that we're going to have some further loss from COVID-19. As we look overall at our pie for 2021-2022, again, this hasn't changed much from what I've presented to you in the past, but let me just kind of talk about some of the highlights that that I think are important for discussion here. And we're going to have a slide on the farm, but in 2020, the farm roughly contributed about $616,000 in total sales and use tax. And we anticipate in 2021-2022 that we should be able to pick up $284,000. So if you take that away, well, first of all, if you look at the sales and use tax line on this chart, you'll see an 8.2% decrease with the farm. If you take the farm out, it's a decrease of 4.3%. Now, what's really important here is that we're typically seeing a 5% or greater sales growth over the last 10 years. So if you took that, what we typically would expect to see in sales and use tax from the growth of our businesses in our city at that 5%, then that's a 9.3 point difference, and that's roughly $688,000. So that's a pretty significant number that we have to overcome. As well, on the passports, we're anticipating to be full up on passports starting January 2021. So that's full up operations. And I, just as a note, Jody Gunderson, again, has just been doing a fantastic job. She's negotiated extremely well on the TSA and TWIC possible addition to our passport servings that we offer. And we anticipate that could be as much as $120,000 incremental revenue. So that's all built in here. And we're pretty excited because we think it's going to come to fruition. I also want to indicate on the building permits, and these are some of the high numbers. These are the more significant revenue lines. And again, you can see this online, but the building permits that we're assuming in 2021 are matching our 2020 trend. So we feel like that next year could pretty closely mimic on those building matches what we had. And then we're anticipating a moderate 1% growth in 2022. We are also assuming that school is in full session coming in January. And with that, we'll have two SROs supporting the school district. If that does not happen, then we could lose as much as $100,000 a year if they're not in session. The school district is maintaining one SRO, but can only support two when they're in full session. Also, in the 2021 revenue lines, we do have the final repayment from the surface water fund, again, taking care of that loan that the general fund gave the surface water fund to support that sinkhole that Director Todd talked about. That's a $212,000. And then one of the drivers that when you're looking at the overall permits, licenses, and fees, and you see that decreasing, part of that also in the out years is a historical decrease that we've been seeing from the cable franchise fees. In fact, we anticipate it to be an 8% drop versus last biennial, which is consistent with what we've been seeing over the last 4 or 5 years as people are moving away from cable providers. So this is the revenue line going through 2026. Again, this assumes that all property tax is flat. This also assumes that less the farm, that sales and use tax will actually increase on average by year 3.22% versus 2020. And then if you look at 2022 through 2026, this assumes a 4.6% increase. The permits, license fees, we're going to grow those by a moderate 1%, but we are seeing and recognizing the anticipated decrease on the cable franchise fees that we talked about by negative 8%. This does assume, again, the passport started in January, and we increase our offering to TSA and TWIC. Recreation, we're assuming that we're going to have that back in full force summer of 2021. Two SROs. We are definitely hopeful that the interest rate improves. Right now, we're still hovering at about a 0.2% on the LGIP. And again, there's only one more loan repayment from the surface water fund. So here's the farm impact, which has been a significant impact for the council and maybe something for discussion. The one-time sales and use tax, we estimate that right now at $900,000 from 2019 through 2021. So, you know, we started to see some of that in 2019. As you know, the $528,000 that we're anticipating for this year has really helped us in this COVID environment. And then 2021, we're still anticipating about $284,000. So in the graphic that you see on the screen, you can see the annual decrease from 2021 versus 2020. That's a negative 6.8%, large part due to that decrease of $528,000 in one-time sales and use taxes from the farm down to $284,000. And then as I indicated before, we're being realistic, still a little bit conservative. We're not at that 5% I was talking about, but that's pretty darn close at the 4.6%. So to Councilmember Bond's comment before that, I mean, even Councilmember Steckler said that, you know, the kind of the sandbag approach really is not in play here. We're being realistic, but slightly conservative. This is the overall org chart that we're assuming going into the next biennial based on this budget. And before I kind of get into this conversation, the one thing that I want to say is that although you may see an open position, that does not necessarily mean that the city recommends that we move forward with hires due to the COVID-19. We really, in our opinion, need to see what is going to happen with COVID-19, the response of the economy, before we fill any or all of these positions. So here, and again, the city manager is still going through this reorganization, retiling. So this is as it stands as of today, not necessarily what you're going to see when we propose the final budget, but I wanted the council to see what we currently have in budget as of today. So you see the chief of staff, executive assistant reporting to the city manager. Communications marketing right now, Kristen's there with an open position. Finance and admin, myself, Jody, 8 customer service reps and accounting tech who does payroll and help support and other functions within her purview.
Working on the Veterans Day project.
Oh, I'm sorry, we've got a speaker out.
Yeah, it gets hot in there.
Sure. Sorry, I just muted that caller. On the PD side, the chief, we're still waiting for that the chief to come in. We do have a detective sergeant, 1 detective, 4 sergeants, police sergeants, 4 corporals, 10 police officers, 2 SROs, support services supervisor, support officers, record, 2 records tech, and evidence tech. Naomi is the city clerk, IT manager. We have that position open, and we're hoping to get that filled fairly soon. Recreation is open right now. Public Works, as you know, Director Todd is reviewing that with his team. You see 3 open engineer positions that may change in title and scope and just how we work forward. So Director Todd is working through that, but that we still are assuming a planning manager, senior planner, and associate planner. So I'm trying to find my cursor to advance the slide. So this is the overall expense.
Jeff, quick question. Sorry to interrupt, but if you go back to that slide.
Yes,
I know there's no HR position anywhere. Are we not recommending that?
It's an excellent question. In fact, it's a great segue, if you don't mind, and to the next slide. Because
sorry.
No, it's great because it's what we call an enabler. The public talked, and we've been looking at this for a long time. We really are approaching HR in a different way, as well as with our legal fees. We anticipate they're going to be working together, if you will. 2021-2022 budget, our legal expenditures will decrease by 26.1%. And that really has a lot to do with the reorganization of resources, as well as using HR professionals, outside consultants, to help us work through risk before it ever gets to general litigation services. So we think that they're going to be working a significant amount of time supporting the staff here and supporting the overall team, and that should in turn help us reduce a lot of the legal bills that we've experienced over the last year or so. When you take a look at the overall, this is the 20 through 2026, each one of the departments, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this, and so please stop me if you have any detailed questions. I'd be more than happy to go through it, but let's just talk with legislative first. Drop of 14.8% or about $28,000. That's really by reducing the legal and conference fees as we return back to normal from COVID-19. So we still see a bit of a lag due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so the conference fees won't be as much because there's not any conferences going on. So we're recognizing that as well as a reduction on the legal fees. The executive side, we're really putting a lot of visibility on the legal. So all the kind of the general counsel type of legal services, you're going to find that in this executive line. And you can see here that that's dropping by $216,000 or about 8%, 7.9%. And again, we're realigning the reorganizational structure, and that includes contract services such as legal services, HR, groups to help drive that overall decrease. We also expect that we're going to kind of get back to normal post COVID-19. Some of these expenses are tied to that. The finance administration, we see an increase of 6.6% or $86,000. And this really reflects the increase in expenses is due to a decrease in turnover rate as compared to 2019 and in 2020. We had unfilled position. As you know, the city manager had to fill in for a great amount of time. So this reflects that we do not have turnover in the finance and admin section. So that's where that increase is. The marketing communications is a decrease of about $98,000, a decrease of 13.4%. Again, we are looking to reorganize and create efficiencies while still maintaining the same levels of service. That's something that we've been working on for months now, and we'll continue to do, and you'll see a more refined look at this as we continue through these budget presentations. But this really is a different approach to labor to maintain the public marketing initiatives and projects. On the IT side, you're gonna see a decrease of about 32,000. Again, we had a bit of a turnover rate issue, but we also, until we find an IT manager, we've been employing outside service. And we think that once that we have the new person on, especially for longevity and the turnover, we're going to still have a decrease of about 32,000. Human resources, to Councilmember Steckler's point, you see a decrease of 88.5% or 146,000. But please remember that a lot of the fees that are now going to be assumed for HR support are up in the city manager line item. So if that's something that the council would like, we could separately identify that professional services line down in the HR, but right now it's all wrapped up in the legal fees up in the city manager side. The city clerk is up by about 50,000 or 22%. And again, that reflects a decrease in turnover rate and having the new city clerk on board. Police department, now this seems very odd, and let me explain this. So that is up 722,000 or 7%. And there's a number of reasons why. One, because of turnover rate. As you know, we had some vacant positions 2020, we anticipate to have the new chief Foley on board. No turnover here, so that kind of picks up quite a bit of it. However, we also have money set aside for two purposes. One is the training, the academy, and the supplies to bring on the new folks, as well as there's COVID-19 money that we did not expend in 2020 on the capital side that we're sliding over, for example, firearms, that sort of thing. But we have to wait for the philosophy of the new chief before we expend it. So that is essentially improving the bottom line or the fund balance in 2020 and sliding over to 2021. The fire safety is an increase of 6.4%, $506,000. This is 100% tied to the current contract that we have today. And that runs until 2023. City hall expenses increased by $31,000, just under 5%. This is, we're assuming this based on the insurance rates increases that we anticipate, as well as sales and leasehold excise tax. The planning, we see a decrease of about $388,000, quite a bit, 25.3%. This is really demand. We're kind of with the farm decreasing, we're anticipating that we're going to see a decrease in the demand, and we've seen a decrease in the demand over the last 9-10 months. Specifically. So we're looking at that, projecting that out with only a 1% increase. We're also looking at ways of improving our technology. We have a lot of labor-intensive processes that we're currently doing that absolutely could be automated very, very rapidly, and that's going to help us improve efficiencies. On the public works side, $182,000 decrease. That again is because have been reorganizing and we're looking to continue to create those efficiencies that primarily are driven by COVID-19. But now as we kind of see with new technology, new processes, then we think it's something that we can hold on to essentially maintain that reserve. And then recreation, as you know, has been greatly impacted. So the decrease in $110,000 is largely in part to the professional services that were associated with the recreation, and with that, again, not coming on until later 2021, and as well looking at to do things a little bit differently, we anticipate about $110,000 or 20% decrease. And you saw the slide before. Again, this is the general fund reserves, again, assuming a 0% property tax increase. On the city streets, that's what we're looking at here. You can see the decrease of about 20% overall, and that's really being driven by $300,000 associated with TIB that we picked up as a revenue line. Now, we have yet, we have to identify the project, and so we will see some expenditures go against that once we have identified in the capital improvement plan. But that's the primary, the big driver there. The overall street fund includes about $985,000 revenue and about $1,022,000 in expenses. So this is, again, one of those funds that is highly dependent on grants and the general fund to keep solvent. When you look at the revenues in total, you can see that we, again, are very realistic for the motor vehicle fuel tax. If you look at the 2020 numbers, see that drop down to $353,000 as compared to $430,000 in 2019. That's all COVID-19. So there are a number of months that people were not on the road as much, especially in March and April timeframe. We have since seen that number pop back up since those early months of COVID-19. So we anticipate we're going to get, even though they'll be reduced versus 2019, we'll see a gradual return to the 2019 numbers. As soon as about 2022. On the expense side, in 2020, the big increase here of $562,000 is that we had $99,000 going for a Ford F-550 truck with a Duralift on it. What we're assuming here is just normal inflation, and we also have assumed through the 2026 forecast here $100,000 per year in traffic calming capital expense items. And then again, as we talked about the street fund reserves, this is something that again is highly dependent on grant support and general fund support. So you can see that projecting out, we anticipate in 2026 about $147,000 in reserves. When you look at the surface water, this surface water fund is definitely recovering from the earlier years where it was in pretty bad shape, especially when we had that sinkhole. But you see 98% of the overall revenue is coming from the fees itself. We anticipate in 2021 a 14.3% increase. This was approved based on the study that the city conducted. And then after 2021, the agreement was a 3% year on year. So that's what you're seeing here reflected as those revenue numbers increase. Looking at the expense side, you can see 2020, again, and we talked about this before, 2021 includes the 2020 COVID impacted projects. So we're lifting our pipe repairs up to just over $1 million. This will also be the last year where this fund is going to have to pay back the general fund what it owes it. The balance is $212,000. This is also servicing now, you see the debt service line, that general obligation bond. The general obligation bond of $3.3 million is fundamentally decided by the city to bring that in to support general fund capital type of projects. But since it's a general obligation bond, it is now in the capital improvement fund, and you'll see that, which can support other projects. And if the council so decides to use any of that money for a different purpose outside of surface water, then this debt service amount would drop proportional to that usage, if that makes sense. So this is the reserves. Again, this is kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier in the presentation. You see those reserves jumping way up in 2026, but that's because you have not yet seen the capital improvement plan. And once you look at that and make the determination, we'll reflect those numbers in here, and that will certainly come down. Now we're going into kind of the smaller funds. No real difference than what you've seen before. We're anticipating council contingency fund at zero fund for next year. Municipal arts will end this year with about $31,000 in balance. Right now we have about $5,000 held in budget for 2021, 2022. 2020 and does include $25,000 for historical preservation. Paths and trails will end this year about $6,800. And then right now we don't have any expenses identified in 2021 or 2022. So if that's the case, it would end the fund balance in 2022 at just under $10,000. Drug buy fund, what we're showing here is that whatever we bring in and donations and other revenue, we would match that in expense and try to hold the reserves at $5,850 each year. City Hall North Fund, this one could actually come down a bit. Again, we're anticipating what the requirements may need, especially with the HVAC. We had in 2020 expense of about $80,000 transfer to the CIP for the HVAC and $440,000 for the roof. We suspect, and you'll see this, is that there's, I believe, 20 plus units, HVAC units, City Hall North that need to be replaced here in the near future. So you'll be seeing that here next week. Debt service, we talked about this. You see that we focus on keeping a zero reserve, so you bring in just enough to cover the debt service. Right now in the 2021-2022, that's coming out 100% from the surface water fund, because right now we've identified all that $3.3 million bond to support the surface water. Local revitalization, this is revenue from the property tax. We're anticipating about $230,000 unless the council identifies a project that they like to go forward with in 2021 or 2022. Our rate, boy, I tell you, this is a tough one. Again, I said this before, we have to be very cautious on it. Again, COVID-19, I hate to keep saying this, and I want to reiterate what the city manager said. We're anticipating, there's agencies out there that anticipate that almost 75% of small businesses may not be standing by the end of this pandemic, depending on how long this goes. And although right now we are not anticipating that our property tax is going to have a hit, what I'm concerned about for the public is if there's no demand or there's a lessened demand on real estate, we may see that drop, and in turn, the REIT numbers could drop as well. For the capital improvement plan, and Director Todd, feel free to jump in, but I'll go and take a stab at this and just jump in if I've missed anything. But next week, you're going to see where we're at on capital improvement 2021 through 2026, and that will obviously have an impact to this preliminary budget. We really are going to break out projects in two ways. You have programs and projects. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. The way we define the programs is typically we fund those every year at the same type of run rate. And we're going to break it, the CIP, down so you can see it that way. And then the projects are funded and timed according to the scope of work and when it's available and what our staff capacity is as well. We'll present that to you in a lot of detail next week. But for this budget, we actually are assuming over $7 million in CIP, and that's really for sizing, meaning that although in the next slides that you're going to see, we have a number of projects identified, there may be some shifts based on your decision from the CIP. But in total, I think we're probably going to be right about that $7 million at the end of the day, just a different mix of projects. So as you look at the capital improvement fund, when we end this year, this one had a huge increase due to the general obligation bond. If you recall, that bond was misclassified in the surface water fund, so we had to move it up in the capital improvement fund, which increased the reserve to just under $7.3 million, where we're trending for 2020. Then, of course, that's going to decrease in 2021, 2022. Parks and open space, and by the way, in the blue box, I've identified what was currently approved in the last CIP. So those are the projects that are approved and that are part of the expense lines here. Question mark here on the parks and open space CIF, I'm being, as you can see, very conservative on mitigation. So 2019 through 2020, we anticipate mitigation fees of $1.3 million, and here you can see that were about $215,000 in total. But I will tell you, based on COVID, what we've been seeing on the COVID is we've had minimal returns on the mitigation. So, you know, my conservative side says keep matching trend until we see something different. And that's what you're reflecting here, what I'm reflecting here. The road improvement. Yes.
I've got a question regarding the CIP. I know we took the money that the county had gave us, that County Council Member Ryan had donated for the crosswalk over by Jackson High School, and we had moved that over to Seattle Hill Road. Are we putting the crosswalk back in our CIP to look at, since we had kind of moved the money that the county had given us for that?
That is an excellent question, and I believe Director Todd next week is going to be walking through what the current thought is and recommendation to staff, but it is included in that CIP, so you'll see that next week.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What, clarify what you mean there, Jeff, when you say we'll see it in the CIP.
So, Councilman, I don't want to speak for Director Todd too much. Director Todd, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. Let me try to take that. So what happened, if you recall, last year was that the design that was proposed for that crosswalk at Jackson High School was about $150,000. The county had offered up $100,000. We collectively, staff and city council together, said, pause on that. Let's see if there's a different way to do this. And so that's why that whole thing got put on hold. What we'll talk about next week is we still have some complete streets money to spend, and we need to spend that this next year. And I think there may be a way to do a more cost-effective approach to that crosswalk out of Jackson High School. It needs to be a project that's in concert with what the school has planned. Part of the problem, you remember last year, was that crosswalk delivered pedestrians into a driveway. And so the school had not completed their design on things. So there's a lot of consequences of that project. Let's talk about that more next week. But I think it makes sense to look at a regular conventional crosswalk with signs and stripes on the pavement, but not the expensive rapid flashing beacons that made it be $150,000 last year. I just don't think it's warranted, and I don't think the city wanted to throw $50,000 into it. So that's what we're looking at trying to do. it really is a decision that council needs to make. We got some ideas. We'll bring to you next week.
Okay. Just to clarify, so if Terry Ryan called and said, what's going on with that crosswalk, I would be accurate in saying it's still in the budget and we're discussing it still.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more next week, and it's going to be up to you guys to figure out how we do that. There's still some engineering to be done, obviously, but I think we need to agree philosophically, what would we like to do and how do we make that happen along with the priorities of other projects we've got. But yes, a crosswalk okay. There is something we want to talk about. I think council and the community should indeed be involved in that conversation.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
To the chair, to add some substance to Mayor Pro Tem Vignale's question, the monies were earmarked for Jackson. They were never actually transferred to the city. And so it still remains a question of whether the county council would repurpose that money for Seattle Hill. We've never received an affirmative response. And so that is also, I want to be clear on that assumption that you made. We don't actually have the money. It was never actually awarded. It was awarded for that project when we worked to repurpose it to Seattle Hill Road. It was around the time of COVID-19. I think there are a lot of questions about the county budget, and they never made a commitment to repurpose those monies.
So we were never able to.
Perfect. Thank you for the clarification.
John?
We were never able to cash the big check that Terry brought us?
There was.
That check was no good. Okay.
The check was intended, Councilman Steckler, for the Jackson High School crosswalk. When we didn't fulfill our end to have that approved, I believe that it's the entire county council that would need to speak to whether they would allow it to be repurposed, and that hasn't happened. So there was an assumption when we received the check that turned out to not pan out for us legislatively.
Actually, on a serious note, I did talk with Jared Mead, and he was informed that he was under the understanding that money was made available to the city last year and had been expended. So he this is good to know. This is news. We were not under the impression that it was not expended to the city. Yeah. On a serious note.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I will follow through on that statement and run it to ground and report to all the council at our next session, and I'll call you to clarify. If I'm wrong, I will stand corrected, but I don't believe any monies have been received by the city.
Okay.
Well, back to the road improvement fund, we might actually have a little bit of upside here. So you can see in the 2020 trend, the revenue at $5,085,000 roughly. We're completing our final billing now for the WestDOT 35th, and then anticipate that we might see an additional $400,000 that we're able to request reimbursement for. So we may see that reserve jump up a little bit there. Again, the CIP projects, we'll review those next week. The equipment replacement fund, you can see in 2021, the 346 right now shows a delay in city street equipments of $230,000 and public safety on the auto for $116,000. Unemployment comp fund, I think we have plenty here. We're trending about $20,000 for 2020, a lot to do with the COVID-19. We anticipate to finish up and be able to hold the unemployment about $38,000. And then, of course, I'll update that if need be going through the next biennial. Any questions for me? And again, I welcome the council, the public, anybody that would love to sit down and crunch numbers with me. I'd be more than happy to share detail and assumptions.
Before we get to you, Mark, just really quick, great work on putting together a lot of information. For the public's benefit, Michael, could you just walk through the process? Because it's kind of convoluted because we've got a lot of moving pictures. We've got the budget. We've got decisions on property taxes. We've got about the CIP. Can you just kind of outline the next 3 weeks for us so the public knows what to.
Yeah, I beg your pardon, Mayor. I'm trying to locate my planning calendar at the end of the packet. Next week, November 10th, we'll have the public hearing on the 2021-22 preliminary budget and the 2021 property tax levy, if any. We'll also have a study session at our next council meeting on November 10th on the 2021-2026 capital improvement plan. Then on November 24th, 2020, there'll be a public hearing on the proposed 2021 property tax levy, again, if any, a public hearing on the proposed 2021-2022 budget, and council action on any 2021 property tax levy, if it's proposed. We'll also have a public hearing on November 24th on the 2021-2026 capital improvement plan. On December 1st, 2020, there'll be a study session on proposed final amendments to the 2019-2020 budget. There'll be a public hearing on adoption of the 2021-2022 final budget, a public hearing on adoption of the 2021-2026 CIP, council action on adoption of a final 2021-2022 budget, and then council action on adoption of the final 2021-2026 CIP. Finally, on December 8th, we're proposing a public hearing and adoption of the 2019-2020 final budget amendments, public hearing on adoption of our budget for the 2021-2022, if necessary and not completed at the December 1st hearing. We have that as a default date. And a public hearing on adoption of the 2021-2026 capital improvement plan. Once again, if this work isn't completed at the December 1st meeting, it gives us a chance to revisit it on December 8th.
Thanks, Michael. And just for the public's benefit, we have to make a decision on any property tax changes by the end of November, which is why we don't finalize the budget till the beginning of December, once we know what decisions we've made on the property taxes. Councilmember Bond, you had a comment or a question?
Well, we've talked about property tax. We haven't talked about the EMS levy. I don't know if we're just assuming they're together.
I think this was intended to be a general discussion covering both. So if you want to speak to the EMS levy, you're welcome to.
Well, if I heard Jeff right, the assumptions in this are to not go with an increase in the EMS levy. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, that's the assumption that this budget is based upon.
Okay, so normally, I don't believe we've ever not taken the EMS levy part of it because our fire costs, it goes to helping defer the expense, but that cost, the money collected from the EMS levy doesn't come close to covering that expense. I would be in favor of having some discussion about the EMS levy before just assuming that we're not going to have it.
Any other comments from council? Thoughts? I think you're correct. It would be helpful, maybe, Michael, in the next meeting, just to have a summary of what we've done the past number of years on property taxes, because I think Councilmember Bond is correct. We have regularly increased the EMS levy 1%, but we've been a little bit all over the place on the property tax. I think we did 0% 2 years ago. I think 2 years before that, we may have done 1%, but 2 years before that, I think we did 3%. So that's just the recent history. We could take that back farther if people wanted to see that information, but I think that would be pretty easy to track down. Councilmember Bryles?
I just mentioned that we had some banked. How much are we looking at banked right now?
Are you asking about banked capacity on property tax?
Yes, I'm sorry. Banked capacity on property tax.
I think it's around 4. We've taken some of it. Jeff, do you know?
Yeah, we have, and I don't have it directly in front of me, but I believe the number is 74,000.
Do you know what that translates into as far as a property, like a 4% property tax or a 3%?
That's roughly about a 1.5, I believe, if I'm doing the math correctly in my head, based on the.
Oh, $70,000. Gotcha.
Yep.
Jeff, earlier you talked to the 1% limitation, but the price deflator that kicks in this year, that limits us to 0.062. Does that impact at all the ability to use any bank capacity?
No, we can use the bank capacity. However, it is a very good point that you raised, because if either way that whatever bank, if we decide not to move forward with the 0.6% this one for next year, and you, let's say you bank that $47,000 essentially, you will not bank it at the total 1%. It'll be banked at the IPD level. Vice versa, if you decided to pick up, you can use your bank capacity anytime you want. So you could pick up any or all of the 74,000 roughly, if I'm right, on what we have banked without taking a decrease due to the IPD.
Go ahead, Mark, and then Councilmember Steckler.
Just for our new council members, as well as any of the others that might not be aware, the fire board, the fire district, we contract with Fire District 7 currently for our fire services. They've expressed an interest in renegotiating and talking about where our contract's going to be as it's coming up. I doubt they're going to offer some sort of rebate. So we will be paying more for fire service. They're at least going to be asking. And it's why I'm leaning towards looking at this EMS levy with the 1% increase to try and help defer whatever that's going to be.
And Council, if you don't mind, I just pulled the bank capacity according to the Snohomish County Assessor's Office right now, $75,455.04.
Councilmember Stecker, you had a question or comment?
Yeah, I did. On the general fund, and I'm not sure, maybe this is forthcoming, but City Manager, I didn't hear it on your planning explanation. Typically, when we've done this in the past, we look at the plan for Mill Creek over the next 2 years, and that includes a department by department breakdown with, you know, what are the expectations, objectives, what are we going to accomplish in those departments, what are the expectations going to be based on these budgets, so that we understand here's the budgets are derived by the actions that we're agreeing to take, and you know, typically what we've gotten, and you've sure you've got these, are the preliminary budget books that break down by each department what the budget is by department and what they're going to accomplish, everything from, you know, issues like the HR department had a whole bunch of objectives that they had to accomplish, and marketing, public works, and information systems, open tickets, all kinds of different things. So how the city was going to be run, and how we're going to staff it, and who's going to be in it, and how it's going to be done. Before we can approve a budget, we need to have a good handle on our city plan. Is when can we expect that detail to coincide with the budget so that we can approve this?
We're hoping to report progress on it as early as our next budget meeting. There are some matters that relate to requests from one of our bargaining units that's very similar to the question you're asking. And we're going to be working to ensure that our responses are as well thought out as council expects them to be. Our goal is for the next council meeting, Councilman Steckler.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments, discussion? None. Are we ready to move on in our agenda?
Yes, we are, Mayor.
Okay, hearing no objection. Thank you for all the work on that. And look forward to hearing what the public has to say at the public hearing a week from tonight. Moving to the consent agenda, the only item is item G, City Council Special Meeting Minutes of October 20th, 2020, and the regular meeting minutes of October 27th, 2020. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Consent agenda is approved. I think all of our attention might be elsewhere right now. I'm sure each one of you has another screen up off to the side that you're watching. moving into reports really quickly, I just had three items. I think I'm not sure when we'll roll this out for meeting. We are looking into experimenting with Zoom rather than GoToMeeting. So I'm not sure when we'll roll that out, but I think that it might be a little more amenable to the meetings of our size than the GoToMeeting. So that is in the works. Second, the SCT meeting, really the only thing that came out of that is a matter that I'll let Stephanie report on because it occurred at the PSRC that she attended. And then lastly, better late than never, we're having our BYOB town hall tomorrow night. Bring your own beverage and your computer screen. So the information should be up. Barbara, sorry for the late notice. We'll do better going in the future, but we're going to kick this off and see how this goes tomorrow night. So look forward to seeing whoever is interested at 6 o'clock with your favorite beverage of choice. Since we're all remote, you can bring whatever you want. And we'll try to answer your questions and hear what you're interested in and what questions you have for us. So that's all I had for tonight. Going to the end of the dais. Councilmember Bond, any report tonight? I'm sorry, Mayor Pro Tem Vignal.
Reporting on the PSRC meeting that I attended, as expected, pretty much the majority of the meeting was discussing whether or not to pass the amendment that the county had brought forward for the 2020 or 2050 draft. I don't know if you all remembered that originally we had went in and we had wanted 6% growth in the rural areas of the county. And everyone had kind of agreed to this, and the city, we had came together and we'd sent them a letter supporting that. And then when they started looking at adopting it, they actually ended up, someone dropped it down to 3%. And this was a big burden on the county because they had vested properties already, and 3% just was not a realistic number. So Executive Summers had came in and worked together with them for a compromise and came back with a 4.5% increase in the rural areas for growth. And there was lots of discussion, quite a bit of discussion. And then ultimately that was approved. And the draft, the 2050 plan was approved with that addition in there. So that is pretty much all I have to report, I think. So I'll let whoever else next wants to talk.
Councilmember Bond, any report tonight?
No report.
Councilmember Steckler?
No report.
Councilmember Briles?
I just wanted to mention that I attended the Halloween candy handout anyway, from the city with my kids, and there were some challenges, but we were able to overcome some of that. We talked with the city manager and the chief police and got some things turned around, and I actually turned around and went back, and my kids were able to get some candy from that, and they were pretty happy.
Councilmember Morgan, any report tonight?
No report, Mayor. Thank you.
Naomi, could we look into getting Councilmember Briles the same mic that you got me to see if he has the connection? So sounds like my new mic may be working better.
You sound a lot better. A lot better.
Good. City manager, any report? You covered the planning schedule earlier. Anything else to report?
Yes. Nothing else to report. I believe Jeff has a brief update regarding our COVID program with our small businesses. Jeff?
Thank you, City Manager. This is extremely exciting to report to the council. So as of today, we have received 37 small business applications for a total dollar ask of $1,957,451. We anticipate another $90,000 to come in. That is fantastic. We got more than what we anticipated, and I suspect that we'll be able to fully distribute the $600,000 in small grant funding. On the service organizations, remember we have $70,000 allocated there. Thus far, we've received three applications valued at $120,415. We anticipate another $10,000 coming in. So those all close tomorrow at 5 p.m. And then we'll be working on the evaluation of that and distribution. And we should be able to announce on November 10th how that distribution will look. That's all I have. Thank you, City Manager.
That concludes our reports, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. We are now into audience communication to close out the meeting. Anyone like to speak to the council? Mr. Nelson, name and address, and then 3 minutes.
Guys, Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive, Southeast Mill Creek. Earlier in the meeting, Councilmember Steckler had a question on property values around 2008 and 2009 and what happened. With my tax receipts here, the property values, assessed value in my house went down $15,000, and the city take on that went from $750 to $694, or a negative $56. And that all went away in 2010 with a property tax increase and a levy increase from 8.77 to about 11.33. So that's probably what would happen in the future. I somewhat chuckled at how the assessor managed to avoid the extreme downturns in assessed valuation when they did their work, but I think my property dropped about $250K, and the worst they could come up with was like about $56K. So anyway, that's it. Oh, one more thing. Mr. Bond talked about the EMS levy. And while I don't like any property tax increases at all, hardly, the EMS levy is one you may want to seriously consider implementing. Because on that one, you can really get behind the eight ball on the amount of money we have to give or the losses that we would have to make up for any increase we don't pass. Thank you.
Would anyone else care to speak to the council tonight? Going once, twice. With that, we will stand adjourned at 7:53 p.m. with 7 minutes to go before the polls close on the West Coast. I'll see you all a week from tonight, 6 o'clock. Thank you.